This program is brought to you by Cabinet, a nonprofit arts organization based in Brooklyn, New York. Cabinet depends on your support to continue our activities. For more information, visit us online at cabinetmagazine.org.
Welcome to Show and Tell. My name is Paul Lucas, and this is the third and final installment of Show and Tell's spring residency at Cabinet. I want to thank Sina Najafi and everybody at Cabinet for hosting Show and Tell during the spring. It's been really great, and it's going to be great tonight. Show and Tell is going to continue after this installment. The next Show and Tell is going to be on June 24th, Sunday, whatever the Sunday of that weekend is, Sunday, June 24th, as part of Photoville, which is a really interesting event coming up in Brooklyn Bridge Park. And Jasmine, would you like to say a few words about Photoville?
Our website is photovillenyc.org, and I'm sure Paul will be sending out some more information.
Paul will be sending out lots of information, and Paul will be passing around a sign-up sheet for the Show and Tell email list, which I know many of you are already on, but I'll be sending it around later so that you can keep up on all the Show and Tell news, including our event with Photoville. That event will be photo-themed. It will be Show and Tell's first themed event, where we're going to ask people to bring objects relating to photography, whether it's an actual photograph or a camera or something relating to photography. Up until that event, including tonight, there has never been a theme to Show and Tell. The basic idea is that interesting objects and the stories behind them are their own reward, and that's what we're going to pursue tonight. Show and Tell is exactly what it sounds like. You can bring an object of personal significance and talk about it for up to 3 minutes. Those of you who are American who have experienced this in grade school, and I say that because quite a few people here I know are not American. And in fact, interestingly, Show and Tell's, I've been doing Show and Tell for about a year and a half now, and there have always been a fair number of foreigners who show up because they're really, well, they are foreign. Is it not a literal term?
When someone has an accent, they're always foreign.
Okay, people who are not Native Americans who show up because they are intrigued by the notion of Show and Tell, because apparently Show and Tell is not done in grade school in other countries. But it sort of pushes a nostalgic button for Americans and a curiosity button for other people. And I usually get the ball rolling with some Show and Tells of my own. And I'm going to get started today with these. These are a pair of custom orthotics that I just got from the podiatrist yesterday. And the reason I got them relates to Mother's Day. And Mother's Day just passed, and most of you probably either saw your mother or called your mother or sent an email to your mother or are now realizing that you didn't do jack shit for your mother. And for a variety of reasons, not going into, I couldn't see my mother on Mother's Day, and so my brother and I saw her several weeks prior to that. And we took her out to lunch, and while we were preparing, we were at her apartment, and she looked at my shoes. I had nice dress shoes on because we were going out to a nice place, and she said, "Paul, you're getting bunions." And I mean, these were nice, like, leather dress shoes, you know, that they're very thick and, you know, nice shoes that have a very specific shape. And she said, "You're getting bunions." And I said, "Mom, what are you talking about? You can't see anything about my feet. All you see is shoes." And my brother was saying, "Yeah, like, what do you..." And she said, "A mother can tell." And this was sort of a Mother's Day thing, and so I just let it go. And then I got home, and I took off my shoes and took off my socks, and I looked at my feet, and I thought, well, maybe the knuckle on my foot was a little knobby. I didn't have any discomfort or anything. And I thought, well, hasn't it always looked that way? Or maybe it's happened gradually and I just never noticed. But I thought, I'll look into it. And so I went to a podiatrist, and he said, yeah, you have bunions, and you're going to need orthotics. And here they are. He took a cast of my foot. And I don't know what kind of special ESP mothers have. And I was a late kid. I was born late in my mother's life. She's now 88 years old. But, you know, she still got it. She's still a mom. She will always be a mom. And I called her, and I said, Mom, you still got it. You know, I don't know what you saw. I don't know how you had this X-ray vision to see through my shoes, but you were right. I have bunions, and now I have these orthotics, which I'm supposed to break in just a few hours a day in the beginning, which is why I'm not wearing them right now. And I will pass them around. I just got them yesterday, so they don't smell like my feet yet or anything like that. And really, they're quite expensive, and for something that's quite expensive, they don't look like much, and they don't look really any different than like a Dr. Scholl's kind of thing. But I'll pass them around, because passing around is part of the essence of show and tell, to share. And I have another object, since I just talked about Mother's Day. I'm looking ahead to Father's Day, which will be next month. And when I think of Father's Day, I think of this ticket stub, which is from June 17th, 1973. It's stamped right on it. And that was Father's Day, 1973. I was 9 years old. And this is a ticket to the Mets game from that date. They were playing the San Diego Padres. And they were running this ad campaign, as they do every year, take dad to the ball game. They were saying, take dad to the ball game. What a treat for dad. Come to the ball game. And I thought, yeah, that's what I should do. I should take dad to the ball game. And so I told my father, we should go to the Mets game that day, and I will buy your ticket, which, according to the price here, was $2.75, which is a lot when your allowance is a quarter, which is what my allowance was in 1973. So I bought his ticket, but I didn't really think through the fact that he still had to buy my ticket, and my mom's ticket, and my brother's ticket, and he had to buy us all like hot dogs and soda, and he had to drive through Father's Day traffic and drive home. Like, this wasn't really probably the best Father's Day treat I ever gave my father. I didn't think all that through, but he was a sport about it, and years later I asked him, and I said, that wasn't really the best, was it? And he said, no, but I appreciated the thought. and I still have the ticket stub, and I always think of it when Father's Day is coming up. And I'll pass this around, too. Please be careful with it. It is a 40-year-old ticket stub. With the great little Mr. Met rain check icon. So those are my two show and tells for today. We have a bunch of people who signed up for their own show and tells. I know there are probably some people who are trying to decide whether they're going to participate, and that's fine. We'll have an intermission, and usually there are people who think, you know, maybe I want to participate after all, and that's fine. Just approach me during the intermission. If you don't think you have a good object with you, you're almost certainly wrong. Show and tell is really easy. It can be as simple as whatever's in your pocket, whatever's in your bag, whatever's in your purse. Really simple, banal objects. It can be a set of keys. It can be, you know, something that you've had stowed away in your wallet for years. It's not about having a really cool object. It's about having a good story. So the way we proceed is I will call the next person up on the list. That person will come up and we'll turn over this timer, which will give that person 3 minutes to tell his or her story. And when you're done telling your story, you call the next person on the list, and he comes up and does the timer and all of that. And the purpose of the timer is in part to, you know, provide a visual metaphor for the sands of time slipping away so we can all see and all that. But, you know, if you go a few seconds over, that's not a big deal. There's no gong. There's no hook. We're not going to, you know, kick you off the stage. But the idea is that everyone should get a turn. The next person is Elena. Or is it Elena or Alana?
It's Elana.
Alana is going to come up, and she's going to turn over the timer, and off we will go.
Hi. Okay, I'm going to turn the timer. So, this is, I don't know what it is, but I have a pair of them, and I call them my queens, and I've had them for a very long time, and I lived in Hell's Kitchen when it was still really, you know, little prostitute drug gang ridden, and I had a great super named Louie, and Louie was the best dumpster diver in the world. Really, but no one can beat Louis. I mean, he actually at one point dumpster dove and ended up finding a gun from the Civil War. I'm not kidding. He gave it to my dad. We got it checked. Best dumpster diver ever. So he dumpster dove two of these, and I don't recall exactly how I ended up with them. And when I heard about this night, I was in my living room and I looked across the floor and I was like, you know what? I'm so bringing the queens in. And it really wasn't until I was sitting here tonight that I thought a little bit more about them. And I realized that they've caused some interesting turbulence in my life. The men in my life don't like them. I'm not kidding, they don't. And my now ex-husband, when we were gonna move in together, I clearly remembered a big debate about you really have to get rid of stuff, get rid of those things. And for whatever reason, I was really attached to them. So they've been at the end of the bed on each side, protecting the bed, and now they sit. Maybe they're intimidating, I don't know. But now they sit at the end of, I have a bookcase from the old craft bookstore that's also a found object. Now they sit on either side, protecting all my books. And I really dug them. I really dig them, if I can say that. I didn't dug anything. And that's it. I imagine maybe they're meant to be by a fireplace. I don't have a fireplace. But here's one of two. I would have brought them both, but they're a little bit crazy to walk around with. So, thank you. Adele is up next.
Hi, my name's Adele, and I brought what? When I first moved to this country, we were very poor. My dad, from what I know, or from what I heard, he somehow came across some gold coins, and he sold them off to get us the last plane tickets he'd ever buy. And that was to the U.S. He lived a very hard life. He worked on his knees. He was a tile setter. And we lived basically hand to mouth for a long time. When we moved to this country, he bought himself a set of these glasses. Etched in the glass is the Soto name and crest. That's my last name, if you haven't heard. Around the lip was gold, and that way when you drink, gold touches your lips as you drink. Throughout my entire youth, never got to drink from these things. They stayed behind glass my entire life. I would always say, you know, can we ever drink from them? No, they're too precious, whatever. Well, about 4 years ago, my dad passed away, and this is the only thing that was handed down to me. Instead of putting them up on a shelf, I decided to use them. And with time, as you can see, the gold is now gone from scrubbing it clean. And I think there was 8 of these. This is the last one. I've broken them all. So tonight during intermission, I'm going to say, thanks, Dad. I'm going to wrap this sucker up, and I'm going to stomp on it. Gotta let the past go. So that's my story.
Before you call the next person,
yes?
Is your father still living?
No, he died 4 years ago.
I'm sorry. And where did he come from?
Spain. Actually, I was born in Cuba. Then he was from Spain. He came to Cuba, met my mom. I was born there, went to Spain. My sister was born there. He said, Franco fell from power, said, let's get out of here, and we came to the U.S.
Should we arrange a Jewish wedding for this moment? Okay.
Up next is Roxanne.
Pardon? So my family has a lot of strange traditions. Half of them are Roman Catholic. The other half like to pretend they're Roman Catholic and have this weird sense of death. just overall. Starting with my great-grandfather, Danny. And it's a huge Roman Catholic, half Italian, half French family. So there's like no family event that's less than 75 people. But that's just the minimum. And we all live in Florida. Well, they all live in Florida. But anyway, starting with my great-grandfather, Danny, they would go over to the house once they started to get a little old. And before Post-it notes, they would take pieces of paper with some tape, and you'd go around, you'd take their favorites first, and say, "What do you want when I'm dead?" And underneath every piece of furniture, every painting, you would see someone's name. That way, believe me, it prevents a lot of heartache after you're gone. You know, we all realize that it's inevitable, it just kind of happens, it's this natural evolution, so it becomes that. My first indoctrination with it ever was when I was 4 years old, and there was this hanging up in my great Aunt Clara's house. And it's, you know, it's colorful, and it's birds, and we had two birds, so I like birds, so she's taking me around, and she says, "What do you want?" That, you know? I was 4 years old. I forgot about it. So I went to Florida just this past 2 weeks ago, and for my sister's graduation, and my great aunt had passed, and they were cleaning out her condominium because, like everyone, they all go to Pompano Beach to die. I don't know. You probably have relatives that live in Boca. It's all like that whole cumulative. Everybody moves from here to there. So my mom had given it to me, and she's like, "Your name was on the back of this, on this faded piece of paper." And I wish I saved the piece of paper. Unfortunately, it came off of my luggage on my way back. And yeah, so that's it. My Aunt Clara, she always knew I loved doves, and it's made in Luxembourg, and it says 1767, but that's probably just the founding of the company. And, you know, it's the same tradition. My grandmother, when she handed this off to me, she went and she's like, "Remember this little Chinaman?" I'm like, "Nope." So, but apparently I will be inheriting that when she eventually passes as well. So, I don't know if you guys might take that tradition on to your families, but it prevents a lot of heartache. And that's that.
What?
Oh, sorry. Yes.
What do you do with it? Like, do you display it?
Well, there's a string on it, so she had it displayed like this.
What do you do?
Oh, I haven't hung it up yet because I have a 8-month-old kitten that if there's anything hanging on the wall, she finds a way to destroy it. So when I get a ladder high enough to get out of her reach, I'll be hanging it up as well. And that's that. So the next person is Andrew.
A day in April. Trash day, evidently. I left the house. I saw two men outside with box cutters stripping down a soaking wet couch that had been thrown out on the curb. They were undressing it like a carcass of a buffalo. I got on my bicycle. I'm commuting. I'm on a bicycle path. There's a trash pickup truck. There's a trash truck. And there's a man jumping out frequently, and he's putting trash in, and it's compacting as it's going. And I'm following maybe too close. And there's lots of cars on the right side, and they're trying to pass. They're trying to pass me. They're trying to pass the trash truck. It's maybe 8:45 a.m. People want to get where they're going. I want to get where I'm going. Trash truck's in the way. A piece of trash, while it's compacting, the machine scrunching it down, flies off and hits me across the chest and hits the ground behind me and goes. And in that instance where it was flying at me, I thought, was that a carrot? So the carrot hits me, bounces off, and I think, was that a carrot? And I look back, and it's rolling, and then it gets run over, and it's flat, as you can see now. And I thought, plastic carrot, what is this plastic carrot that hit me? And so I stop, I go back, I pick up the plastic carrot. It says, you know, something like, what's it say, Greenbrier Industries? Something like that. Greenbrier Industries ends up being the one of the sources where the Dollar Tree gets its merchandise. And so through the number on that's impressed in the plastic on that carrot, I have discerned that this is a carrot wiffle bat. A miniature carrot wiffle bat that came with a t-ball set. A miniature t-ball set that was a stalk of celery with an apple on top that you hit with a carrot. Next is Colleen.
I'm like, oh, I'm going to attend again today. I was excited about my email. I'm like, I got to go again. And I got to not just listen like I did last time. And I was like, oh, I just picked up the niftiest thing. We'll get to it in a second. So who's been ever signed at work to think of some unique swag for yada yada event? I, this morning, I'm on my third week of work, and there is an event being held at a venue in Soho, and I'm told that as an administrative personnel of my company, I normally won't be able to attend this type of event because it's a big thing. I usually be in the background, you know, making it work. But since I'm new and I don't have much work, please feel free to go ahead and attend. So I'm pretty excited, and I hear it's a little educational and guest speakers and talkers, and I'm like, all right. So instead of dressing up for work, which it's pretty business, we have lots of clients and always dress up. I'm like, oh, it's educational. I'm going to be in a hotel at a conference. I'm just going to bump it down a notch and wear some denim for my first time ever. Well, upon walking in there, I see my first coworker, and she's like, oh, hi, and kind of looks at me weird. And I'm like, oh, that's because I'm new and they didn't expect me here. And then the third or fourth employee would be like, oh, hi. And I'm like, okay. And finally, it hits me that this is like a gala event, and I'm just there so early that I don't realize it until everyone's trickling in that I'm way underdressed until like the head board member guy who's doing the introductory speeches walks by and is like, and I'm like, oh, Jesus. So I eat my almond croissant, chug my coffee, take off my name badge that says I'm staff, because I think everyone keeps being like, oh, she's staff. Oh, what's she wearing? It wasn't going well. So on my way out, I'm like, I'm going to grab one of these bad boys because it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And I'd never seen it before. Kind of weird right there. And you put it in here and it makes it louder. It's amplified it. I don't know how it works. So on my way out, I was desperately like, oh, I messed that up and I don't get to sit in today and slack off from my job that I just got. I grabbed me some free swag and went back to the office and tended to my administrative duties. So, yes, this is a little amplifier that you can brand, and I found it pretty neat in the world of swag. If anyone works in marketing or anything, they're always scrambling for something that's not throwaway. So, thank you, guys. We have Nina up next.
So my dad is a retired university professor, and he, in his retired years, has started leading a lot of cultural tours for Stanford University. And the people who take these trips are they're very, you know, interesting, educated people in their golden years of their life, and they take these very nice educational trips. So I went along on a trip with my dad on one of these tours in March to Morocco, and it's really not the way I usually travel. I mean, we were staying in 5-star hotels and moving around as a group, and it was a lot of fun, but also a lot of people were shopping at a very, very high level for beautiful carpets and things like that. And I bought absolutely nothing on this trip until I encountered this object. And you cannot tell what it is from far away, so I will describe this to you. This was bought in the capital city of Rabat. And we had visited this kind of cultural center where we had had an Arabic lesson in the morning and then had lunch. And as the bus was sort of about to pull away, I saw this in a case. And I said to one of the women teachers there, are these objects for sale? Because they sort of looked like they were in a vitrine with maybe sort of candy crafts and things for sale. And she said, yes, it was made by, you know, a sort of village education project, something or other. And this object is actually a figure of a Muslim woman covered in a long veil and dress, painted bright yellow with her face showing through just a tiny bit here. And it was such something so strange collided here. It's sort of one part Rancusi's Bird in Space, one part banana, one part toy that I won't name more specifically. And that was all, I was already sold, like visually, I was already sold just based on what this thing looked like. But then she handed it to me, and I held it. And when you hold it, you can really feel the hand of the person who made it. And the minute I find an object like that in the world, I have to have it. I love things like this. It's just, you know, you have to, it's very important to pass this one around. You really have to try to grip it this way, and you can feel how it must have been held when it was made. And it was about $4, and I made everybody wait for me because the bus was pulling away. But this is the only thing I bought in Morocco. That's the story.
Talks about that object being a certain kind of toy and her father being a university professor. Would you like to mention what your father's...
My father taught human sexuality.
Yeah. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, apparently. So that's our first act of show and tell for tonight. I know there are some latecomers and some people who are sort of on the fence about whether they want to participate. We'll take a little intermission. Everybody go visit the bar. Everybody, if you haven't looked at Cabinet, if you're not familiar with Cabinet, the magazine, please look at the issues that are available. Please consider buying an issue or two or subscribing, because it's a great magazine and they support events like this one. And so they're already enriching your life with things like this, and they can enrich your life further, and you can enrich them if you subscribe or buy some issues, and that's a good thing. So if anybody wants to participate in the second act of Show and Tell, please approach me during the intermission, and I am going to guilt trip some of you and say it's better to give than to receive and all that jazz. Usually I say, you know, you don't have to show and tell. It's fine to just be shown and told, but... participating is good, right? Right. Okay, so we'll reconvene in, 15 minutes. We're going to start the second act of Show and Tell. Oh, you know, I had
not helped this thing yet.
So we're going to get started again with the second act of Show and Tell. I know there's some people who have come in during intermission and who were not here before. For those, I will briefly recap that this is our last installment of Show and Tell Spring Residency here at Cabinet. Starting next month, or not starting, but for next month in June, we will do a photo-themed Show and Tell as part of Photoville, which is a pop-up photographic village taking place in Brooklyn Bridge Park. Show and Tell will be taking place on Sunday, June 24th, at 6 p.m., is that right?
At 6:30.
6:30 in the early evening on June 24th. Full information on that and all future show and tell events will be sent out to the show and tell mailing list. If you have not already signed up for the show and tell mailing list, you should. Does anybody? I think I've sort of been a pest to everybody about the show and tell mailing list. People who want to be on the show and tell mailing list can sign up for that. There's also talk of show and tell perhaps going to another venue, perhaps a bar. If you're on the mailing list, you will be kept up to speed on all of that. The event at Photoville next month will be our first themed show and tell because the object should be related to photography in some way. You can bring a photograph, you can bring a camera, you can bring anything relating to photography. Up until that event, we have always had show and tell as open, no theme, no program, no rules. Interesting objects and the stories behind them are their own reward. We're going to get started with a new group of showers and tellers, but I will get the ball rolling myself, as I always do, with an object I've shown and told before, and I apologize to those of you who have seen it before. It's an oldie but a goodie. It is this quarter, which lives on my keychain, and I like to use this object because it demonstrates how even the most simple, banal object can be really good show and tell. I moved to New York City in 1987, and I was told how the Halloween parade was such a great event. You have to go to the Halloween parade in the Village. And it wasn't the big event it would eventually become. And so I went down to the Halloween parade, and I watched, and I was amazed. It was this great thing. And there was this guy in the parade handing out tiny Ziploc baggies, each of which had a quarter in it. There were lots of people handing out lots of things. But this one guy had little Ziploc baggies with a quarter and a slip of paper, and the paper said, in case of emergency, call this number. And the number turned out to be the number for a suicide hotline and a runaway hotline. And so he was promoting his runaway hotline and with a quarter, because of course at that time there were no cell phones in 1987, and if you needed to make a phone call, you'd go to a payphone, and it cost a quarter. And here was this particular quarter that I got, which had a hole drilled in it, right through George Washington's head, like he's getting a lobotomy or something like that. And it's a 1981 quarter, so it was 6 years old at the time. It has spent 25 years on my keychain, or it'll be 25 years this Halloween. And it's gone literally around the world with me, this quarter. And it is sort of my emergency quarter. That if I'm down to my last quarter, if I need a quarter, if I need to make a phone call to pay phone or anything I need a quarter for, I have this quarter, and it's gone all over the world with me, and I kind of like that it's my emergency quarter. And I've always wondered, would it even work in a payphone or in any vending machine? Because it's got this hole in it, which means it no longer weighs as much as a quarter is supposed to weigh, and coin-operated gadgets are very precisely calibrated. And I've always kind of wondered, and I kind of like not knowing, you know. Like I could put since it has a hole, I could put a string on it, like I could put fishing line on it, and put it into the like payphone or whatever, and find out if it worked and fish it out if it didn't work. I kind of like not knowing because sometimes the question is more interesting than the answer. And so this is my Halloween parade 1987 quarter, my emergency quarter, and I hope I always have it. I'm going to pass it around so you can see all my keys are on this. I really need this back. For the people who are new and came in during intermission, I'm now going to call the next person. The next person will call the next person after that. Each person will have 3 minutes. When you come up, you turn this over. You have 3 minutes to do your show and tell. And the next person is Rupert.
All right, continuing on the theme of the dark ages back before cell phones. In high school, before the era of video games, I was a nerd and I played my share of role-playing games and the like of Dungeons and Dragons. And the game I played was also called Illuminati, and I had never known what that word meant, but the Illuminati game was a game about the ancient conspiracy to take over the world by the Bavarian Illuminati, and I was, oh my god, this is amazing, and I started reading about the Illuminati, and I mentioned this to my father, and my father was an odd character in his own right. He said, oh yeah, the Illuminati, I have a book about the Illuminati. And he brought down this book out of his library. It's Barral's work, and this is the original publication that like blew the doors off of the big world takeover conspiracy and that led to the French Revolution and et cetera, et cetera. I never read the book. but while paging through it, I found this little scrap of paper, and it says, Rienzi to the Romans, Mary Russell's Mitford. I'm like, oh my God, it's part of the conspiracy. I'm totally going to blow the doors off this thing. So there's no internet. I couldn't go to Wikipedia. So I go to my library, and this is mid-80s, and in a couple of hours, I figured out who Mary Russell's Mitford was. I found out that Rienzi to the Romans is a speech in a play by called Rienzi, a tragedy. And Mary Russell's Mitford died in like 1840 or something and wrote it in 1820 something. And the book itself, you can see that in the title page, was bought the city of New York, November 1811, 37 and a half cents. But I found out the actual play in this little library. I found a copy of the play. I found the page in that play with this speech, and I found a biographical note about her that she loved to write her plays. She was very prolific, apparently, on little scraps of paper. And this thing has a accounting of a trip to Saratoga, and so I have some little piece of Mary Russell Mitford's Rienzi the Romans. But the real thing about it was, screw the Illuminati. It was much more, it opened up the door to research for me, of the idea that, wow, I could just walk into some library and I can find out just about anything. And that is actually a love and a discipline that's followed me ever since. Thanks. David is next.
This is my EpiPen, which I've carried around in my backpack since 1998. It tells me on the side of it that it expired in August of 2000. It reminds me of a lot of things. I carry it around mostly as a talisman against allergic things rather than something that I would ever shoot myself with. It has instructions on it where you pull this cap out and you stick it in your thigh, and it says, using a quick motion, press hard until injector functions. Hold in place for several seconds. Like I said, it's a talisman. It reminds me of every allergy season since I got allergic when I was 18. Reminds me of my fear of bees because my mother is allergic, but I've never been stung. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation called Genesis. Wikipedia tonight tells me it's from 1994, and I don't know if anyone's seen this episode, but it's an episode where some strange virus infects the Enterprise, and everyone on the Enterprise starts to devolve. Wikipedia says, Worf has reverted into an aggressive predator attempting to mate with Troy, Riker a caveman, Troy an amphibian, and Barclay a spider. And what I remember about this episode is that Picard comes to the ship from some outside thing, I don't know, whatever the MacGuffin was, and he gets infected, and he starts to revert into a lemur-like creature. And he experiences this intense fear when something confronts him. And sometime after I saw that episode, I was getting shots at my allergist, which is why I have this EpiPen in the first place, because when you get shots, you get one in case you have a reaction outside of the office. And I had a reaction in the office, and my doctor shot me with Epi. I don't know if anyone's been on Epi before. But you get shot, and there's 30 seconds where nothing really happens, and then suddenly your adrenaline kicks in really hard, and all you can feel is pure fear. And at that moment, I understood Picard's devolution into a lemur. And this reminds me that at our core, we're all sort of scared woodland creatures. Kirsten.
I also brought something from Morocco. I had a very different trip than Nina had a million years ago in the mid-90s, I think it was. I went with my friend to Morocco, and pretty much everyone prophesied doom and destruction and that they'd never see us again, and like, it was nice knowing you, have fun, we'll never see you again, you'll be sold into slavery or something, I don't know. But we had an amazing time. It's a very poor country mostly, but people are so unbelievably gracious, it was just incredible. And two young women traveling alone that didn't speak any of the many languages that they speak there. Everyone was very kind to us. And one of the moments that really stood out was we took buses, took all day over the Atlas Mountains and across Morocco to get to this small town called Zagora, which is on the edge of the Sahara Desert. And it had been an outpost of the French Foreign Legion, like before setting out across the desert. And before that, it had been where the caravans stopped to load up on water and supplies, because it's an oasis town. And that's just beautiful. Just an amazing like little a river with green all around it in this incredible dry, pebbly, sandy area. So our Lonely Planet and Rough Guides that we always cross-referenced recommended to us this tour that you could take riding camels into the dunes in the desert and camp overnight. It turned out to be these two guys who had this little business, who were younger than us, I think, then. The main guy's name was Lawson, and we were constantly afraid of being ripped off and like worried about money because we were really broke, but we knew we seemed rich to everybody there, relatively speaking. and so we gave them the down payment because they were like, we need to go buy supplies for this little camping trip, which I think meant having their moms cook dinner for us because they didn't really know how to cook dinner. So in the meantime, we had like an afternoon to kill. And so Lawson took us to his mother, to meet his mother, who didn't speak any English or French. She was Berber. And she made tea for us. And everywhere you go in Morocco, you have to drink tea. And it's always three glasses of tea, or you're incredibly rude if you drink less than that. And those are just little teeny glasses. But it's a problem where the bathroom might be a hole in the ground with two little spots for your feet on either side. And so you just have to pee all the time and find bathrooms. So we brought as a gift some sugar. And sugar there always comes in a loaf. So it was like a brick of sugar wrapped up in this beautiful purple paper. And this woman was just so incredibly friendly and gracious without being able to communicate directly to us. And her son spoke a little English, so he would sort of translate. And she had a teapot just like this. And it has this part screws off. There used to be a little plastic jobber right here, because the whole thing gets really, really hot, so you need it to be able to lift the lid off. And you just get a bunch of fresh mint and stuff it in, and a handful of what's called gunpowder tea, which is, it ferments into little balls. So it's like little round bits, you throw that in. And then as much sugar as you can afford, basically, seemed to be the trick. And then the hot water. And then with the glasses, you might put a sprig of mint for decoration, and you just pour it from really high so it cools off a little bit as you pour it. And it's really virtuosic looking when they do it. It's really beautiful. And then sit and have tea. And it was just such a gracious moment, and it was just a kind of a symbol of the generosity. And so at the next market, we stopped and bought a teapot that we brought home. And my friend no longer lives with me. She's in Amsterdam now. But every time I put a bunch of tea in here and make mint tea, I think of that time out in the desert. and it's very handmade also, like almost everything you get in Morocco. I'm not totally convinced that it's all food safe materials, but another reason I don't use it every day. Next up is Ben.
All right. So today I have a card. Last time I brought a card as well. So I'm kind of on a card kick as of late. This card says Warden's Market and Deli. You know, it's like your classic business card. But it really has some personal significance to me because a few years back, I just graduated from college and I was looking for a job. And I couldn't find a job. I spent like 4 months. I was looking everywhere. First I started with my major. I was looking for, you know, journalism jobs, like writing jobs. I just couldn't find one in that community. And I started to like just lose sight of like any sort of like who I was even. And so at one point I even applied at Taco Bell. I was just like, I thought I could at least be a manager of Taco Bell, and I didn't get that. And so I was really starting to get down and out. So I finally got this job at Warden's Market. Because I used to buy so much Olympia at this market, so much Olympia beer at this market, that was the only reason I was like, the guy who hired me was like, oh, Olympia. And I was like, the only reason I could get a job. And so so I finally got this job at Warden's, and I was so excited. I wanted to just really get in there and like be cool with everybody. And you know, at one point I thought, like, these are great guys. I would really get along with all my employees, and it was really, they're funny. You know, we could play our own music over the PA system, and we stock wine and beer and just be ridiculous. But at one point, you know, they invited me over to a party at one of their houses, and I was like, okay, a party is going to be cool. When I got there, the guy who had hired me, I was like, this is strange. It was just the guy employees of Warden's, and I was like, what? Really, like, what is this? What kind of party is this? My boss, who had hired me, was apparently like a bottle into, like, just a bottle of scotch he had already consumed. His wife was out of town. He was looking to just, I don't know what, but we're all gathered around. We're just eating beers, just like consuming at the rates you're not supposed to, and at one point. Someone, and I was starting to think, like, what is going on here? Like, and they started bringing up this. They're like, oh, you want to do what we did last weekend? Like, it was kind of this. And I was like, what is this? Like, what? And they were pretty cool guys, and so at one point we all kind of got we all got in a circle. No, don't. It's not what you think. So it was what they had done the weekend before was. It's kind of like, it was like kind of like Fight Club. It was their own version of Fight Club, but it was not like cool Fight Club. It was not like really badass like Brad Pitt and stuff. It was like slap Fight Club. And so I didn't really understand. I was like, so we were all standing in a circle, just kind of like looking around, and so like two guys would get in front of each other, and at this point I was pretty far gone, but I just wanted to see this night through and be a part of the team, you know, a part of the group. And so, and my boss is there, and he's just hammered, just. And so, the first two guys go, and it's just like this. It's not like nice slaps. It's just like, boom, right across the side of the head. I really shouldn't be doing this. I'm not a fighter. This is truly ignorant behavior, just idiotic behavior. So at one point, it's me and my boss, and he's like probably 6'3", and he's like, I want you to hit me. I want you to hit me in the side of the face as hard as you can. And I'm just like, well, you know, you only live once. So I just wound up and just cracked him right across the side of the face. And he did it back to me, but like without any warning, and it just like knocked me like head over heels. It landed right on my ear. And so we did this for a couple of times, and my boss ended up falling down a stairwell at one point. And the next day at work, he was there just like with like a purple thing going on. He was just like, let's never do that again. So that was my first post-collegiate. Jasmine.
Bracelet that I'm wearing that oddly actually has something to do with the story that you just told in a totally weird way. So anyways, this bracelet I got in sixth grade. I went on like a weekend trip with my best friend at the time, who's like now still my best friend. I went with her and her family to Palm Springs, and we went on a trip. If you're from Southern California, you go to Palm Springs to go outlet shopping. So we went outlet shopping one day. And the next day, we went hiking, because that's the other, you go outlet shopping, you go hiking in Palm Springs. And the backstory of the hiking is that my best friend's older sister was in high school at the time. She was in high school biology, and her biology class had this project called the Insect Project, which is this like infamous project that you did in the 11th grade in high school. And you were given a list of different species of bugs that you had to collect, and every bug that was harder and harder to find, you got extra credit for it. So you were supposed to find these bugs, capture them, kill them, pin them, turn them in at the end of like a month of collecting bugs. So this was our goal when we went out hiking, is to find, I mean, this was lots of stories of that month of like us in our kitchen finding this weird wasp, like capturing it under a cup, letting it was just it was an adventurous month. But on this hike, one of the things that you got the most points for was if you got a butterfly. And the thing that's tricky about butterflies is if you let butterflies die naturally, their wings kind of close up. And if you're to pin a butterfly, you obviously want the wings to be spread out and to display the beauty of the butterfly. So, I don't know. So this was, we were hoping to, in some way, find weird bugs and ideally a butterfly. So we're like taking a hike, or with like, it's my best friend, her older sister, and her mom and her dad. And just to give a visual of it, my best friend is 5'11", and her whole family's taller than her, so it's just, we're a weird-looking group. I'm, like, this tall, and they're, like, this tall. And we're hiking. And we see a butterfly, and she's like, we have to get it. So her dad has picked up, along the way, this stick that he's using as, like, a walking stick. And he's like, don't worry, I got it. The butterfly's flying, and he takes the stick and just like a baseball bat, just perfectly knocks the butterfly. The butterfly falls to the ground like this and is just forever frozen in time, like so. And it's the story that we're like, remember that time? She's still my best friend. And we're like, remember that time in sixth grade when your dad killed a butterfly and it perfectly landed? And anyways, so that's what this bracelet reminds me of. And I just recently found this a couple days ago. But this bug project was obviously very controversial. As I talk about it now, I feel like a murderer of bugs. But this year was the last year that they had the bug project. It became this big like district controversy, and they ended it that year. But yeah, and it actually, the weird thing was that there was also this like bug black market, like people that graduated that had like bugs that were a lot of extra credit points would then sell it to kids younger than them. So lots of things, but yeah. That's my story. That's what my bracelet reminds me of. Okay. Cameron is next.
Okay, my object is a cabinet tote bag. I didn't even know about this event until about 2 hours ago. I was going to come to the book launch, which is actually next Wednesday, and I got on Facebook, and it said that the show and tell this thing was going on. So, and then I saw this. And a best friend of mine from college, a British guy, introduced me to Cabinet about 3 years ago. And after college, I worked as in an office on the weekends and had a lot of time to kill, so I would read Cabinet every Saturday and Sunday. And about 6 months ago, he came to visit me in New York, and I wrote him a message, and I said, we can go to Cabinet Magazine and go get these tote bags together. So on that Saturday, we ventured out to Bergen Street, and we went to the Cabinet Magazine office, and we knocked on the door. I don't know what we were thinking. Like, it was going to be some type of, tourist office or something. And this woman answered the door, and she was like, yes, can I help you? And we wanted a tour of Cabinet, but there were two people in the office, and we were so embarrassed. We forgot all about the bag. And so that happened. And then I come here tonight, and I see the tote bag, and I had $20, and I wanted one too, but I could only buy one. So I'm going to send it to him in a letter to England. So that's it.
That actually... Cameron was the last person on the list, but that actually provides the perfect segue for somebody who I know has been waiting to do a little show and tell of his own, and that would be Sina, who is the editor of Cabinet, and who is our gracious host this evening, and who has a really interesting object to show and tell.
Thank you, Bill. I know I'm going to need 3 minutes, because this object, though spectacular, I'm interested in a very different part of this object than what you will see. In 2004, we did an issue on electricity, and we got Rachel Maines to write an article for us. Rachel Maines, if you don't know her work, has written a lot on the history of sexuality in America, and she wrote an amazing book on the history of the orgasm. And for the electricity issue, she suggested that she write about this kind of object. The first things to be electrified in the United States, the first domestic appliances to be electrified were vibrators. And the reason why we ended up with this object is that we needed a photograph of it for the magazine. And we asked somebody to take a photograph of it for us. That would have cost us $100. But on eBay, you can buy this for $25. And we have many objects there, and we deaccession them all the time. But we've kept this because there's a kind of a sign of a certain kind of economy where the image of the object is four times more than the actual object. So I love this object just because it reminds me of the kinds of incredible shifts that we're going through in terms of an object that was produced in 1922 and cost $25, and a photograph of it that cost $100.
So you photographed it yourself?
We did.
Did you personally photograph?
No, Rio Manabe, who is our assistant manager at the time, there's a plaque up there that you'll see in memory of Rio Manabe, who moved back to Japan after 7 years at Cabinet.
And did he take the photograph? Did you pay him anything?
No, he was on staff. We took the camera.
You just added it to his responsibilities.
We did. He's a good photographer, and he took a picture of it.
I think that's a sign of a different kind of economy.
He's on staff. But did we do wrong?
I think it makes sense.
Anyway, so that's the history of this little object here. Is that the last part of show and tell?
I believe, is there anybody else who wants to show and tell who has not shown and told yet? What? There's another show? Hmm? Oh, you have a question?
Yeah. We've never plugged it in.
I know that there are outlets on.
All right. We'll plug it in for the rest.
plugging it in.
Haven't you ever?
$25 for a working vibrator from 1922. Plug it in for the first time.
I mentioned that there's never been a themed show and tell before, and I'm thinking there may have to be. And I think I know what the theme may be.
If that truly is our last...
I believe that's the end of tonight's show and tell, and it's also the end of show and tell's run at Cabinet.
Yes, it is. And I would like all of you to join me in thanking Paul Lucas for three amazing episodes of show and tell.
Thank you.